We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Chris Fedor from Cleveland.com. Chris, how you doing, pal?
I'm doing great, guys. Great to talk to you again.
You excited about Carrasco re-signing extension?
Of course. Absolutely. Does this pretty much confirm the decision that they're not going to trade him? It's not like something in the NBA where they sign a guy to a contract and it assigns a value to the guy, and that just means they're going to move him. That's not the case in baseball, right?
Yeah. No, I doubt it. I think they probably trade Bauer or Kluber, and probably yeah. Bauer is my guess right now. But
That's the way that I was thinking, too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. All right, let's switch to hoops. We were talking about Colin Sexton. Dustin was saying before the break, he's not sure how he feels yet about Colin Sexton, especially because maybe there was some friction with the veterans. I hate the Cavs veterans. I hate's a little strong. I don't like the Cavs veterans, so I'm on Team Sexton. And I know things are better now, Chris, or at least I think they are. What is the relationship between the vets and Colin Sexton right now? And are you on Team Vet or Team Sexton?
All right, so I think my whole understanding of the situation with the Colin Sexton versus the veterans thing, it wasn't so much him. It wasn't him that they had the problem with. Like, yeah, there were areas of his game where they're like, what is this kid doing? Does he even know how to play? And there were people in the organization that were saying at the beginning of the year that he didn't really know how to play, and he had to learn how to play in the NBA because it's a lot different than college and what he was asked to do at Alabama. But I think the real crux of the issue was Colin Sexton was the symbol of a rebuild. He was the guy that they wouldn't trade, essentially, during last year because it was the Brooklyn pick at one point, and they hung on to it, even though a lot of the players wanted the Cavs to go trade that pick for somebody that could help them take a run at the Warriors. And there were people in that locker room that felt last year the Warriors were vulnerable. So they hung on to the Brooklyn pick for the entire year, and that became Colin Sexton. He became the symbol of the rebuild, a new direction for the organization. I think it was really difficult for guys who, for 4 years, all they knew was winning, all they knew was going to the NBA Finals, to accept the reality of what this team is now without LeBron James, and to accept the reality of they were stepping into a rebuild. Not tanking, but rebuilding and starting to think about the future more so than the present.
How good do you think Colin Sexton will become?
So I was talking to a couple of people inside the organization about this very thing last night, Dustin, and the vibe that I get just in talking to them, and this is not them saying it to me, it's just the vibe that I get in these conversations. I think they feel like he's a piece. I don't think they feel like he's the piece. Mm-hmm. I think they feel like they need to get the piece, and that's probably going to be in the 2019 NBA draft, or if it's not there, maybe they're eventually going to have to try and package some of these young assets that they're acquiring, some of these draft picks that they're trying to acquire, and see if they can go fishing for a guy in the trade market. And I think the thing with Colin is he does a lot of things really well, but I don't think he does anything one great. Like, he's not elite at any aspect, and I think it's going to make it tough for him to crash through a ceiling because of that. I think the combination of Eric Bledsoe, De'Aaron Fox, those type of players, I think that's what Colin can be, and I don't think that can be the centerpiece of a rebuilding franchise.
Chris, Jason Lloyd was on with me or one with us on Friday, and he made a point of saying that he doesn't think that the Cavs should trade a lot of the veterans, but he doesn't think they should trade Tristan Thompson. He should be the one veteran piece to kind of lead these young guys into the future. However, Tristan Thompson, I know his contract is high, but he's played well, right? He could
right.
be valuable potentially to another team. How do they balance that? What do you think they should do?
I think it's the most difficult guy that they have to figure out. I think of the guys who are quote-unquote tradable on this team, I think it's the toughest question for them to answer. Because, one, he is playing at an extremely high level, and I don't know that his value will ever be higher. Like, there are people that are talking about him getting all-star consideration. I don't think he's going to make it, because there are two spots for centers in the Eastern Conference, and he's not beating out Joel Embiid, and he's not beating out Drummond, and Nikola Vucevic is having a better year than Tristan down in Orlando. But he's in that conversation, and it's something that I don't think anybody would have expected at the beginning of this season.
But, Chris, so I don't understand. Sorry to cut you off.
I mentioned this to you yesterday, Bull.
I mean, he's not really – they're not going to put a guy on a bad team averaging 11 – I know he's doing some other good things, but – you're going to put a guy on the worst team in the NBA averaging 11 points on an all-star team?
No, they're not going to. And that's what I'm saying. He's not going to make it.
Yeah,
but he's in consideration, right? And that's a lot different than what anybody would have expected at the beginning of the season. Like, he's one of the four guys that's going to get consideration for an Eastern Conference center spot, four or five. And that's a big step from Tristan Thompson and a guy who was looked at as just a hustle guy, an Iron Man streak type guy, a put-back artist. They're running offense through him at times, in the post, in the elbow. He's setting screens to free up his teammates. So there's a lot of value for what Tristan brings. And I think a playoff team would have a lot of value for him, even though he is limited offensively in some of the things that he can do. The other thing that the Cavs have to consider here, guys, is that his contract expires at the end of 2019-20. So they would have to make a decision on him in his future and whether they really want to commit to him. Because if his value is going to be at its highest right now, and they don't know whether he's going to be a part of this long term, and they don't know if they're willing to commit to him beyond next year, then maybe you do have to strike while it's hot. At the same time, he brings a lot of value for this team when it comes to his leadership and what he has meant behind the scenes. All the guys have raved about his leadership behind the scenes, and he has become the voice of this team as well. So I think it's a layered conversation. I think it's really, really difficult. And if I had to make the choice, I think the value that he brings to this organization is not going to be matched by a team in a trade, and I think it's better to keep him around.
Chris, I was at the game last night, and you know, it was just a weird vibe, weird feel, seeing the Warriors out there with Durant and Curry and Iggy and the whole crew and seeing, like, empty courtside seats, just not occupied. And the vibe in the arena, I mean, it was nice at the end of the first half, and it was almost like they won, felt like they won the game at the end of the first half on that little last-second shot there. The double shot, and but that was it. And it was just a different vibe. I know you're there as well. Did you get the same sense?
Without a doubt. It was very strange. Steph Curry talked about it after the game. Kevin Durant talked about it after the game. I think it's just the reality of the new reality for the Cavs. And it's what happens when you lose the most important player in the NBA, the best player in the NBA. It's unfortunate because for 4 years, the Golden State-Cavs rivalry was awesome, and it meant so much to the NBA, and it meant so much to people of Cleveland. It meant so much to the Cavaliers. They always talked about the Warriors. They were always on their mind. How can we get better to beat the Warriors? What moves do we have to make to try and beat the Warriors? And it's unfortunate that the Cavs, from the Warriors' standpoint, have turned into just another game, but that's the reality of where the Cavs are right now. And if the Cavs want some hope for the future, I think they can look over to the other side of the Warriors, guys, and try and see some kind of blueprint to how to get back to respectability. I mean, the Warriors weren't always this team, right? They were a laughingstock for a long time. They were a team that got to the eighth seed, and maybe that's just about it in the Western Conference, but they built the core of this team before Kevin Durant came to change everything in the NBA. They built the core of their team through the draft, smart drafting, acquiring picks. They tanked to get Harrison Barnes 1 year, and they made really good trades as well. So that's the approach that the Cavs are trying to take, and it requires a lot of luck. It requires not missing, but I think the Warriors are a picture of how to build through the draft and player development and how it can work, even without Kevin Durant.
Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com with us. Chris, Steve Kerr made an interesting comment last night. He said that although the 16 Cavaliers won the NBA championship, that the best Cavaliers team of the last 4 years was the 16-17 team, which lost in five games. I agree with him. Do you?
Yeah, I think so. Because that was the year that the Warriors had Kevin Durant, and for the Cavs to be competitive, at least somewhat competitive. I remember that year going to Oakland for Game 5, and there was just this feeling around that arena of like, we better not let it happen again. The way that it happened the previous year when we lost Game 5 here at home, we better not let it happen again, because if that's the case, we're coming back for Game 7. And then they've got Kyrie Irving and they've got LeBron James in the Game 7, and then who knows what's possible. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I've been on record numerous times, guys. I've said it on your show. I've said it on my own show on 92.3 The Fan. I've written it. Like, it took a long list of circumstances for the Cavs to get that championship, and it's a good thing they did get that championship in 2016, because otherwise, I mean, how would we view this team now? How would people view the rivalry
so
between the Cavs and the Warriors? I think it would be entirely different.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, Dan Gilbert's been very lucky here in Cleveland, right? I mean, he's lucked into LeBron James twice now. Do you think he holds his team back? And will the team ever get good again with Dan Gilbert as the owner?
I think it's a fair question, Dustin. I think it's one that everybody should be asking. I think Dan needs to have a greater respect for the general manager position and the head coach position and what it means in the NBA. And I think until he has a greater respect for those positions, I do think there's an argument to be made that he does hold them back in certain ways. At the same time, he does some good things too. So I don't think I can sit here and say that he's a great owner. I don't think I can sit here and say he's one of the worst owners in the NBA. I think for him and for the Cavs to take the next step as an organization, I think it would be wise for him to kind of back off a little bit and let the basketball people make the decisions that they were brought here to make, the very, very difficult decisions where the emotion is taken out of it. And I think that's one thing that has been a problem for Dan Gilbert and other owners in the NBA in the past. It's an emotional game. Everybody wants to win. Everybody wants the same thing. But when you start making emotional decisions or you start reacting in an emotional way, then it starts to really hamper the organization. So I think he needs to take some lessons from some of the things that he has done wrong in the past, including in the post-LeBron era the first time, and learn from those things. And if he doesn't, then I think it's going to be hard for the Cavs to get out of this.
All right, Chris, you got next game they're playing the Kings, right?
Yep, the Kings, the 12-11 Kings, by the way.
Yeah, that's wild that they're 12-11.
Yeah.
You surprised?
Again, I mean, if you're a Cavs fan, right, and you're buying into this rebuild can work thing, and it's going to take time and it's going to take patience and we're going to build this thing through the draft, you know, the Kings are another team to look at, because only four of the guys on their entire roster have four or more years of service in the NBA. So they're one of the youngest teams in the NBA. They have built this thing through the draft. They've even made mistakes in the draft. I would say that they made a mistake this year by taking Bagley over Luka Doncic, and yet they're still here 12-11, a team on the rise. I don't think they're going to make it to the playoffs, but a team on the rise that maybe in a couple of years, maybe they can make some noise in the Western Conference.
Chris, there were a lot of Warriors jerseys there last night. Did you sense that there were more, like, Cleveland fans that are allowing their kids to go with the Durant / Steph Curry jerseys now that LeBron James is gone. And it seems like a lot of kids just kind of these days wear jerseys of individual players.
Yeah, yeah. That's how my nephews are, actually. Especially my oldest nephew. He's more into a player than he is into a team. And I think it's part of it is the marketing of all of these different leagues. I think the other thing is fantasy. Like when you're playing fantasy basketball and fantasy football and fantasy baseball, you attach yourself to players and you start rooting for guys like Antonio Brown because you want to win your fantasy league more than you want the Browns to win on Sunday against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I just think it's the way it is because of fantasy sports. I mean, I was part of that too at some point. You know, I was a Kobe Bryant fan for the longest time. And it made me, in a way, root for the Los Angeles Lakers because I wanted Kobe Bryant to have success, and therefore I wanted the Lakers to have success. And I think there are people that have grown up watching Steph Curry, being awed by Steph Curry. He's must-see TV. He's very marketable. I think he's relatable for a lot of these young kids, and I think he's a great role model for a lot of these young kids. And even in Cleveland, with Steph being who Steph is, for kids that are just looking for that next guy to latch onto so they can be excited about basketball and the NBA, Steph was the obvious choice.
Chris, good stuff, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, guys. Be good.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.